Hello, everybody. I'm Matt Seidel, along with Derek Seidel and Josh Trope, and this is Coach Speak. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the pod, gentlemen. It's good to see all of you, not just one of you. Josh, welcome back. We found you on a Sunday night. It's a rarity, but we're happy to have you. How's it going?
I missed one podcast.
You've missed a few, actually.
No, it's good to be here. Another great day of Lions football. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. and another Notre Dame win this weekend. But we're here to talk basketball tonight, not football picks.
Yes, we are. Derek, how's it going, man?
It's going good. I didn't have to watch the Lions game since I was busy. And you know, Michigan got a nice win yesterday, and Napoleon got a big win, locked up the conference title in football. So it's been a good weekend.
Cool. You know, when this podcast comes out tomorrow, which is October 10th, we will be either 5.5 or 6 weeks away from the start of the boys season and 4.5 or 5 weeks away from the start of the girls season. And that uncertainty is because the MHSA is considering a slight adjustment due to the new first week of the boys season being the week of Thanksgiving, if that makes any sense. They sent out a survey to athletic directors last week. And I know how I filled mine out. I don't know how your ADs filled theirs out, but what are you guys' thoughts about that possible slight adjustment?
So I have one question first. Why was the season moved in the first place?
It was my understanding that they were trying to appease the BCAM, the Basketball Coaches Association of Michigan, by one, giving them two extra games this year, and maybe not just BCAM, but maybe that was what their membership also shared. And also that I think complaints that the season was too long for 20 games. So not only did they add two games, they shortened it a week because it is the longest season, but I don't think they're really thinking about schools that didn't have school the entire week of Thanksgiving. There are some. I know at Olivet, we only go Monday and Tuesday. I don't know what it's like at Lumen Christi and Napoleon, but everybody has their own thing. So but I think that was the basis of the decision.
So I'll give you mine real quick, and then I'll be quiet so Derek can talk. But I've always said for a long time, and I know that this isn't a popular opinion, but I've always said basketball should start after Thanksgiving. And I do think the season's too long as well. But that being said, I think you also have to look at this, and this is really important. This happened last year. The season ran into spring break. And I don't know if that's going to be the case again this year, but people were on spring break during the state finals. That's a problem too. Like, if anything, if we're going to move the season, move it back the start date and end it earlier. I mean, we're used to starting before Thanksgiving. I don't like it, but we're used to it. But I hate the idea of people, you know, having to make a decision. Do I go to the state finals? Do I go on spring break? Those type of things. They need to look at some things. Maybe I don't know, put a couple basketball coaches on the committee.
I think I agree that it probably make more sense to shorten it on the, you know, the end of the season. I mean, by cutting, they really didn't change the actual season, you know, because you're still allowed to start games at the same time you normally would be, but just basically rushing teams through the preseason a little bit more, I guess, is kind of the way that things were changed. I guess I'm kind of happy to go back because you don't have to be as rushed. So I guess I would enjoy it if they move it back. I do agree that it is a drag of a season. It's tough though, because when you have, you know, winter break in the middle, it is tricky. I mean, you're going to have kind of a weird lull at that point in your season, no matter when you start or end, but I'm not opposed to trying to shorten it. I think it'd be easier to shorten it on the back end. You know, you get a lot of sports. I know football can go all the way till Thanksgiving, but a lot of those other sports are done early. I mean, tennis and cross country and stuff. So like, you know, you're really actually creating this gap where kids are kind of doing nothing, which maybe that's not a bad thing, but yeah, it is going to be kind of weird if they make that change where they're shortening the season and they immediately revert it, but that's where we are.
Yeah. The only part that makes me scratch my head is, you know, let's just go back to November 14 and November 7 and just start on Monday. Go back to the original start dates instead of going back to the middle of the week. I don't, those 2 days don't shorten the season anymore for me. I like your point. There are athletes, there are girls, golfers that are done right now for their entire season. There are soccer players, the majority of soccer players will end their season this coming week. Most football teams in the state will end their season on October, what is that, 21st or something like that. Let's get this thing going. But it is what it is. So if they give us those few extra days and start the 16th for the boys, I will be thankful for that. So enough of that. Our purpose tonight is really to kind of do what we did last year at this time. And we're going to kind of discuss some of what we consider the top storylines for the 2022-23 season. This may have a little more of a boys slant than a girls slant, but we're obviously going to include some girls basketball in it as well. And we've got a couple handfuls of storylines that we want to chat about. I'm going to kick it off, or it's really no particular order, but I think some of the big news in this area. We're going to joke about our area. We'll figure that out. Talk about that more as we go. But there are two coaching jobs, and we've joked about it on the pod over the last few weeks. Like, who is the coach at Ann Arbor Huron? Who is the coach at Ypsilanti? Because there are rumors swirling that even Charles Ramsey from Ipsy was going to retire. You're going to hear this week whether you had maybe people have already heard, or they're at least going to hear it officially this week. Mo Kasham, the JV coach recently, and the guy who's been running their summer program the last couple of years anyway, and a lot of their offseason workouts, he has been chosen to replace Waleed Samaha at Huron. I think you'll probably see an article on that sometime this week and some of the great media coverage that the Ann Arbor area gets. And LJ Frazier is going to take over for Charles Ramsey at Ypsilanti. I think that's been in the works for a while as well. So those are two pretty, high profile jobs in Washtenaw County. What are your thoughts about either of or those two guys coming in and taking over for a couple of big names?
Yeah, definitely interesting. Huron is in recent years, or in the past two decades at least, since I've been around, they've just been dominant. Obviously Ann Arbor really is a basketball city when it comes to the high schools. So I expect him to be able to get that thing going. I know that they probably are going to be they always seem to have close games with Skyline. Skyline probably has more talent on paper right now. But I would not expect them to fall off much in the long term. I think that they can kind of keep things going. When Waleed left last time, it didn't really fall off much, at all. And it was Coach Shunar ended up in the NBA there for a minute. And I think he's back in college now. So, historically that Huron job has been really good. As for the Ipsy job, they have really fallen off these last few years. When Lincoln got going, Ipsy kind of took a little bit of a hit, it seems. And they're kind of been, sputtering a little bit. I'm curious to see if they can get it back going again. The whole Imani Bates saga kind of, I think, really threw a wrench in things in that area, or with Ipsy and Lincoln maybe. But with that being over with, I'm curious to see if LJ Frazier can be the guy to get it back going again, like Steve Brooks.
I don't know, Mo, really. I saw him coach a little bit this summer. Seems to be doing a good job. I know he's been a long time assistant there, and I'm sure he'll keep the system in place that Waleed had there. They obviously had a ton of success under Coach Samaha. They're always going to have talent at Huron. It's never going to be an issue. It's a good school. Kids want to go there. Kids want to play sports there. It helps that football is doing well there right now as well. So they're going to have athletes walking those halls. So he will have a plethora of talent to work with. Now in Division I, though, once you get outside the area, we'll see if he can keep it going. Waleed was able to keep it going at a state level for the most part, pretty consistently. And we'll see if Mo can do that. That is something that, that's obviously the goals when you're at a school like Huron. As far as LJ goes, young coach, he's been on the staff now the last couple of years. Definitely this year we thought he was going to be the next guy in line. Even when I was at Chelsea coaching against Ipsy, it felt like it was going that way. LJ is his work cut out for him. The program is has been in a free fall since Coach Brooks has left. Steve Brooks did an incredible job there. They played defense as well as any team in the state. I know Matt and I, we talked even back in the day that, like, if Brooks would ever hire a offensive coordinator, they'd have a couple state titles. And obviously I love Steve and we joke, but it was just more of a compliment to how well they guarded and what a miserable experience it felt for you when you had to go against them on a Tuesday or Friday night. And Derek, I know you experienced that as a player. I don't think LJ has a chance to turn this around in the next couple of years. Their JVs were putrid last year, and the league is really good right now. You got a Chelsea, Tecumseh, and Jackson teams all playing really well. So I think LJ's in for a long road. Hopefully he sticks it out, rebuilds it, but it's going to take, you know, 2-3 years at least to get that going. Here on the other hand, I mean, the players are there, the talent's there. We're just going to find out if Mo can coach.
Now, I reached out to both of them just to confirm what we thought we knew, and it was kind of confirmed. The one thing I will say about both of them, you can tell how excited they both are about their new jobs. And that right there sometimes is huge. I mean, just a culture change, even though they both are kind of pedigrees from the previous coach, they just the enthusiasm that they're going to bring in, and you give a little spark to both programs. And even at Ipsy, which has been down a little bit, and obviously their football, the program, it appears that the athletes right there are not what they once were. But basketball, you can turn things around a little bit quicker. LJ played for Steve Brooks, right? At one point.
Yeah, LJ transferred to Ipsy his sophomore year and played for Brooks his last 3 years before he went on. He ended up playing at Eastern Michigan as well.
Right, right. Really good player. And you wonder if, you know, obviously, and he's worked with Charles Ramsey as well. So you wonder what he's, you know, what part of that Brooks defensive system he's going to bring, or maybe his beliefs are different. But a young guy, you know, he's definitely a name in the area, and we know how it is in basketball. Like I just mentioned earlier, you get two or three kids all of a sudden decide that they're going to come to your school, especially incoming freshmen. Yeah, it might take 2 or 3 years at the varsity level, but Ipsy, let's face it, when Steve had it going there, those kids weren't all Ypsilanti kids originally, but they were there, and they were there to play for him, and man, did they have some nice teams, and maybe that can happen with LJ. Waleed, you know, I chatted with Waleed a little bit. He has a ton of confidence in Mo. He says, more importantly, the players and the parents really respect and trust him, and I think that goes a long way. Just kind of, you know, the Huron thing is much different than the Ipsy thing. They've had it going. They've kept it going. They kind of, they call it the Huron way. They got their culture. And I think he's set up for success there. So it'd be interesting to see how both of them do in their first year. So speaking of first year coaches, this is another one of the storylines we're going to follow. And we've touched on this already, but want to expand on it a little bit. We have two young and inexperienced head coaches at two high profile programs in our area. And again, we're joke about our area. We've kind of expanded our area a little bit, extended it up to the Lansing area. We're picking and choosing here and there, but Jake Bullock is taking over at Lansing Catholic and Koji Vroom is taking over at Williamston. And here are two guys with some college pedigree, but have never really been, you know, Koji was a head coach at a sub-varsity level. You know, Jake's coming right out of the college ranks as an assistant, which is where Koji just came from as well. They are, you know, again, the expectations of those programs is very high. And I'm sure they're going to have a longer leash than, let's say, maybe a veteran coach or somebody who they've recycled from another program. But what are your thoughts about those two young guys going into that based on what you know about Jake and Koji?
I think that both those guys are ready for the situation they're being put in. I think that, from an X and O perspective, and I know in particular with Koji, because I was sitting with him at B camp, so I can really speak for that. I think he really does think the game and know the game well. I think that they both will do a really good job of relating to players. So I think that it's a good long-term move by the schools. I do wonder, like you're saying, I mean, if there's not immediate success, those are two programs that have had some success, or a lot of success recently and even historically. So being patient sometimes can be difficult. I think, both of them probably are poised to take a little bit of a step back just based on talent, based on what they graduated from a year ago. So hopefully the expectations are set properly for them. But I think it's really interesting, like you said, just to follow it, to see how it goes and kind of see where they can build the program to. It's also fun, you know, from the coaching perspective, just to see how can those two guys kind of make their imprint on the program. Like, how are they going to do things a little bit different? I mean, you know, obviously not only style of play, but just the way that the teams carry themselves, all that kind of stuff is always interesting, especially for me, because if they do anything cool, I might try to steal it. So, you know, that's the way coaches work. All right.
Yeah, you know, this was the topic I was most interested in talking about this week. I've known Koji now since he played for Nick Sherwood. I knew Jake as a college player. I think they definitely both have the pedigree. They've both been around really good coaches, and they were both really valuable, good assistants at the college level. Koji had a short stint coaching freshman ball at Dexter and did a pretty good job there as well. I would say that these jobs are tough jobs because the expectations are really high. And even though both guys, I think, will do a good job, I have to admit I was shocked by both hires. I mean, you have a Hall of Fame type coach leave Williamson. You have one of the best coaches in the state of Michigan, in my opinion, in Brian Dart, leave Lansing Catholic. And they had many, many seasoned vets, coaches, older coaches who had tons of experience and success at different programs go for these jobs. And both schools pass those guys over for these young guys who will probably bring a different mindset, growth mindset to the program, change the culture, be more positive. You know, some of those recycled coaches might have had a history, things like that. But I thought these were both interesting hires. I don't know. We're going to talk about Andrea Caban later, and I thought that was an interesting hire. I thought there's been a lot of interesting hires. You know, how the Hurons handled theirs. I think that's really an underlying topic in this podcast as well. But my point is they're both young. They're both green. They both have lost a ton of talent. Both schools, you know, expect success. So we're going to see how they handle the pressure of that. And I don't know what to expect. I mean, it'll be interesting. I know that Koji has a very tough schedule. Williamson's schedule is brutal. I mean, they got Howell, they have Carmen's Ainsworth. They play Lansing Catholic. You know, they have Chelsea on the schedule. They play their Saginaw Valley Showcase. They have Dexter. I mean, their non-league schedule is really tough on top of a pretty good league this year. And then the same thing for Jake. Jake's schedule is tough as well. And so we'll see if their players lose confidence in them or if the road gets a little rocky. Or who knows, maybe they come out guns a-blazing and tear it up and get on a roll.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, when you examine it too, I mean, again, I think we think highly of both these guys. We've had them on the podcast and we enjoyed our conversations, but we know both of them. I that was the first time I'd ever really talked to Jake, and I've known Koji for a while, but I'm impressed with both. I think just like Derek said, I think they were excellent hires. I do worry, like, what can go wrong and you know, what should they be prepared for? And I guess a slow start, and that's what you don't know. Will a slow start shake either of their confidence? You know, if they're 1-4 at Christmas or something like that. And I know when I took over, you know, my first girls varsity job was at Pinckney. I remember losing the first game. This was they were coming off, you know, 18, 19 win seasons for about 3 or 4 years in a row. My first real serious boys job after I took the Pinckney was the Willow Run job. And obviously expectations were always high there. And I remember being we were 1-3 my first year, but I was a little bit older and I think I was a little thicker skin, but I think both these guys have the pedigree. I think their college experience is going to help them. And if I had any advice to them is stay the course. You know, you don't want to panic if you get down and some people start criticizing. Because I think they both may have huge upside. And if they wanted to stay in this game, it'd be interesting 20 years from now if we could kind of gather again and talk about what kind of careers they've had, especially if they both decide to keep doing it. But we will be keeping an eye on both of them for sure. Definitely one of the big stories. You mentioned Andrea Caban, so let's go there. That's as big a storyline as there is in the area. And let's face it, there's a female coach now coaching a high school boys team in Washtenaw County. Andrea Caban coming off her, you know, she had a state title at Grass Lake 2 seasons ago. Here's the question: can or will Andrea Caban be successful at Chelsea as the boys coach? And what are your initial thoughts to that?
I don't think there's any question that Andrea can coach. That's not the issue. I mean, she's already proven that for many years over at Grass Lake. So that will not be the tough part. Her success is going to be determined on how she can handle her son and that relationship and the locker room. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. That team has a Division I offer in Joey Cabana. Jake Stevens has a Division II offer. Matt, Chelsea basketball posted the other day, and I don't know the exact details, but I saw Chelsea basketball post that Matt Blanton has two Division II opportunities. You have some other young talent on that team and several multi-year varsity players coming. I mean, they are a top five to top 10 team in the state in Division II. And the schedule is very soft to start. They play a Parma Western and Northwest team, which we're going to talk about later, which they should win those games. Then an Ypsilanti Lincoln team that lost everybody. And then it picks up a little bit with Flat Rock, Roseville, and Williamson. So, I mean, we'll know a lot about Chelsea at the end of Christmas break. You know, that's their first six, and that takes you through January 7th. They have three games they should win and three good opponents that, you know, could go either way, and we'll see what happens. But it's going to be the dynamic in that locker room is, you know, mom coaching son, how does that go on the sideline? I mean, we've all lived it. I certainly did last year. You know, how does that locker room handle it? If is there selfishness? Do guys get along? Do people question who's getting shots and how many? Those are all things that I think will determine their success, not her coaching ability. She can coach. There's no doubt about that. It's the other stuff that could get in the way.
No doubt about that. I think, you know, another thing to note, just she had things rolling so well at Grass Lake that, you know, there's only a few big games. I mean, they scheduled really, really tough, but they had stretches of the schedule where they could send their JV team and win. And it's just, and part of that is, you know, the way that girls basketball currently, the state of girls basketball at the moment is there's just some teams that are really struggling compared to those top teams. There's not as big of a gap. You know, Chelsea's going to be tested this year without a doubt. I mean, Tecumseh brings back everybody on a team that split the title with them a year ago. And I think Jackson's going to be good again. And they, you know, obviously they split the title with them as well a year ago. So I expect it to be, like you said, really interesting just to see how they do. And then, you know, the postseason success is always interesting too, because it's a tough road, especially in Division II there. Even if it's not as bad as it was before with Williamson not having five Division I players or whatever it was, but it's still a lot of teams in there that are dangerous. So super interesting. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if I think I expect that on the inside they'll be fine, but you know, it also is interesting to see how, you know, I think there'll be a lot of eyes on it. Is there anybody, any stories that come out of it, you know, because of that? And, you know, they may run into, it's always when you run into adversity that things could come up. Maybe they just won't hit any adversity for a good stretch if they're really as good as we think they could be. So definitely interesting.
I mean, I'm intrigued by it really from afar. I mean, I don't know Andrea very well. Every dealing I've had with her has been really pleasant. Again, she was one of our first podcast interviews, and she came across extremely well. And that was, you know, I think the next that year they won a state title, and they would have been very relevant in that in conversation last year had Bargesser not gotten hurt. She's been responsible for the development of several good girls basketball players, so we know that she has the ability. I've only watched her teams really never live, only live stream. Sometimes, you know, I don't know, like the boys game and the girls game is just different. So I'm wondering if she can make that transition. I'm sure she has the ability to, but you know, their system, is it going to be just a kind of an overflow of what Josh did there last year? Or is it, I know because Greg Stevens is on staff there still, or is she going to come in and do her own thing? So I think that's one of the questions that I think everybody, we're going to get an answer to probably early. She kind of reminds me of Becky Hammond. You know, she in reverse order. You know, Becky was the Spurs assistant, and then obviously, you know, the Las Vegas Ace coach now in the WNBA, and they won a championship. Of course, Andrea did it differently. She won the championship on the girls' side, and then got to the boys' side or the men's side. So I don't know why she reminds me of her a little bit, just their story. I think she's going to be successful just because she's got the most talented team, you know, in that division and the white division of the SEC, and then, you know, all the way, you know, at least through their district, they should have a nice ride. I think that's part of it. I trust Brad Bush and Robin Raymond, and I know they made that pick. They were on the committee that picked her, and they had some other, you know, good candidates, I think, for the job. So, but again, all eyes on Chelsea this year and how she does. And I'm sure Andrea can handle it. She's, you know, she runs the premier program, and I'm waiting for her to run. Is she going to start running a premier boys program too? Or is she that there's no market for that? I keep waiting for that to happen, but we'll see.
I don't know if there's good enough basketball players in the area for premier boys. The girls are more talented, let's be honest.
That might be the case.
Yeah. You know, you brought up Brad and Robin and that hire. You know, that, like I said, I mentioned a little earlier, that it's an intriguing hire, right? Because they had an internal candidate in Austin Elam, much like a Koji and a Jake Bullock, who had been around for a long time, coached at different levels, young guy, culture guy, and they decided not to go that route. And then they had some, as we all know, some seasoned vets go for that job as well, and they went in this route. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Like I said, I have faith in her coaching ability. It'll be interesting if the distractions become too much. We'll see.
Okay. Well, you've been in that locker room before, so we shall see. That's a great one. We might have to have another podcast just on the Chelsea locker room or something in the middle of the year. Anyway, enough of that. Since we're talking about Cabana leaving Chelsea or leaving Grass Lake to take over the Chelsea program, that begs the question, can the Grass Lake girls keep things going after losing Andrea Cabana as a coach? What are your guys' thoughts on that? I know both of you have some experience with the Grass Lake from different perspectives, but how do you match that? Anyway, go ahead.
I'll jump on this one first. I think they'll keep it going again, because it just like, you know, every other boys team in the area, you went with the Jimmies and the Joes. Well, let me tell you, there's a lot of Susies and Sallies at Grass Lake. They got players, and they have so much talent coming. This incoming eighth grade class, I've mentioned it before on the pod, they beat most varsity teams in the state. So I have no doubt that Grass Lake will not miss a beat. You know, people forget before Andrea, Grass Lake was already rolling, not for state titles, but they were having 18, 19 win seasons with Jeremy Davies before that. And so it's been a long time now where the girls have had it going.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm right there with you on that. I expect them to be able to keep it going. I think really what they've built, like you said, with between Davies and Cabana over the last few years, they have a foundation in place where they just have a ton of girls that play basketball coming up. They play at a high level, and they just – like they said, like you said, they beat you with better talent. I think that will still remain the same. I do think this year could be a little bit tricky. I mean, like they are replacing, I know Bargesser, they ended up having to go without her all last year, but they also graduated some other key pieces. And I know East Jackson like was close to them a few times last year. And I think I've heard that they're supposed to still be decent. I could be wrong on that. I'm not as in the loop with the girls Cascades scene as maybe I should be, considering I teach at one of the schools, but I expect in the long term, them definitely to still be the powerhouse in the Cascades, and then have that chance to occasionally make runs at the Breslin Center and the state championship in Division III.
And when we're talking about the new Grass Lake coach, we're talking about April Saltz, of course, right? She and has been a woman who's been in their program, and she kind of knows how things go there, like keeping a culture going, kind of like Mo over at Huron. So, we'll be eyes on the Grass Lake girls. I'm sure their opponents wish that there would be a drop-off, and they're hoping for some type of drop-off. But from what you guys just covered, it doesn't sound like that's going to happen. Keeping our eyes kind of in the Jackson area, but also just looking at the Interstate 8 conference as a whole, especially on the boys' side. Here's our storyline or our question that we want to look at. Can Parma Western and or Jackson Northwest win an I-8 boys title this year? Are the cards, are the stars aligned right for that to happen? This, you know, that last year that league was they had good teams last year and couldn't even get in the top half of that league because of all the talent that was there. Some of those top teams have lost quite a bit to graduation. So what are your thoughts about Western and Northwest chances?
You know, I think this is really an extremely interesting league. I just, from top to bottom, I saw a handful of these teams this summer, and I think I couldn't give you a confident list from 1 to 8. That's for sure. I really could not. Like you said, there was so many talented teams in this league last year. The level of play was just outstanding. And I still think it'll be good basketball. I don't think you quite have as many good proven commodities coming into the season. I really think that both these teams have a shot, because I think that a lot of teams in this in this league have a shot this year. You know, Western, I think, has the depth of talent just that comes through there that if they can get things to click properly, and obviously they got a new coach with Coach Tingle over there. If he can get things to click, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be right there at the top of the league competing for a title. And I think Northwest has a really good group right now. They have some really good pieces that have a ton of experience, and you know that they have the kind of pieces you need to win. Like when you've got a experienced backcourt with Duncan Moffitt and the other kid's name is slipping my mind, the other guard that was good for them last year. And then they have Britton Armstrong inside, who's an experienced big. And you know, I think like Josh always loves to say you win with seniors. And I think really when it comes down to that, it's, you know, I don't know, Duncan's not even a senior, but he's his third year on the varsity, and Britton's a senior who's experienced. So, I do. And the other guard that's name is slipping my mind still, is a senior. So I think that they could be right there as well. And I just think that this is a league where the winner of the league might lose three or four league games. I think that that's a possibility, given how even the teams look coming into the season.
I mean, I think your analysis is spot on. It's excellent. I think, and it's fitting with, you know, my kids being at Lumen now, that I feel like this will be a shared league title with several teams, possibly two or three. I mean, I tend to have that effect on, you know, leagues and people, but I do think Derek's right. I think three or four losses, I think four losses could win the league. I mean, it's crazy. I think both Western and Northwest will factor in to the I-8 boys title. And I do not think either one will win it. I think they'll be right there. I think a Marshall or a Coldwater will end up coming out on top of this thing. But, you know, looking at this league top to bottom, the road trip to Hastings is a nightmare, and they're well coached, really well coached. And if they got a few more football guys playing basketball, they're going to have really good athletes because it's a great football program. Coldwater still has some talent left from that really good group they've had the last few years. Marshall, I think, top to bottom, will have the most talent. And then, you know, you got Harper Creek, who was really good last year, but senior dominated, but had a great JV team. And so they'll battle, they'll compete. It's a tough place to play. They play a tough style, a lot of run and jump, full court man stuff. They make you uncomfortable. You know, Penfield is going to be down. There's no question about it, but they might have the best coach in the league, and Coach Burns. So I think top to bottom, everybody's going to beat each other up. And oh, by the way, I think Lumen Christi will beat some people this year that will be a little surprised by that, but I think they will. So I think the league will beat each other up. Western Northwest will be definitely the top half, but I could see Marshall or Coldwater winning the league.
I'm glad you said something about Lumen Christi. I guess I was going to quiz you if you didn't. But is there a better backcourt in the league returning than the Northwest guards? Is it clearly better, or is it safe to say they are definitely one of the best backcourts, if not the best backcourt?
Yeah, I mean, it is the best backcourt in the league, no question about. Colton Gowdy is the other guard we're all thinking of, the left-handed guard that plays with Duncan Moffitt.
Huh. I'm of the opinion, you know, you get two guards, you keep those two guys healthy. I've seen the Armstrong kid play. He plays with the Truth. Travel with multiple kids from Olivet. Jeremy Wine coaches that team. He's a really good high school, you know, four man, if you will. I mean, inside, getting to the basket, he's got a motor that just doesn't stop. Those three pieces with, you know, if they get any help whatsoever, I actually think they've got a really good chance. Again, I agree with Josh and Derek. I think it's kind of up in the air. It might be five or six different teams, and anybody in this league might be able to get somebody on a given night, like, you know, Hastings and Lumen Christi, who maybe were down last year, they might beat the team that wins the league once or twice. I mean, those things are going to happen, but I think it makes for a really good race last year. The talent level in the conference was outstanding. It does take a dip this year in terms of the talent level, but the race itself is going to be fascinating. So anyway,
is this the last year of the I-8?
No. Oh no. The I-8 is going to be, you know, the I-7, and I don't, you know, Lumen Christi is leaving for greener pastures in their eyes to the Catholic League, right? And I don't know, I think there might be another team or school or two in that league that's sniffing an outside conference as well. So now if they drop to six teams or five teams, then you might see some scrambling And that's obviously what happens in conferences. It's what happened in the GLAC, which is what we're going to talk about right now. You know, the Greater Lansing Activities Conference, which, you know, again, we joked earlier about extending our area. We used to just be kind of the Ann Arbor area, and we've touched on Jackson. We're getting up in Lansing. We flirt with the Livingston County area, the GLAC, partly because I'm affiliated with them, but also they have schools that are within our coverage area, kind of with Stockbridge and Leslie. So this is going to be the final season of the GLAC, period, not just in basketball. And I guess because we have Leslie going to the Cascades, Olivet and Lakewood are going to the CAAC in the Lansing area next year. Maple Valley's going to the Big Eight, which is really the Big Seven now. And then the other three are scrambling to find a spot. But basketball in the GLAC has been one of the most exciting sports, not because the level of play is great. I'm not trying to fool anybody, but there have been multiple girls league champions in the 9 years. This is the ninth year of the GLAC. And there have been multiple boys. I think every school in the GLAC, other than Maple Valley, sorry, Lions, has won at least a share of a GLAC title in, you know, the eight previous years. This is the ninth year. So I guess, you know, that's what I think is the most interesting. And this year's races on the boys and girls side are going to be, I think, are going to be fascinating as well. I think, you know, we are the returning league champs on the boys side, and we return everybody. But everybody else returns almost everybody as well. It was a very young league last year. And I think this league as a whole, especially maybe the top four teams, you know, might be the highest level that it's been, the cumulative in the 9 years. And the girls, you know, I mean, Olivet's going to be a factor, but Leslie just, you know, they have an outstanding coach there. Stockbridge has been relevant, and there's always another team or two that pops up out of nowhere. But you guys have any thoughts about the GLAC, or is that just way over your head and outside your boundaries of thinking?
Well, I mean, obviously, I know the GLAC because of Leslie and Stockbridge, but I also know it because of you. I mean, I'd like to see you guys repeat, get the job done, right? Take one more step, you know, or something like that. I forget what it is. But, and, you know, but more importantly, you know, I mean, instead of the GLAC, I want to see some teams in this league make a run in the state playoffs. And we'll talk about that there shortly. But I'd like to see the Eagles get another league title and take care of business and at least beat Matt Johns. Can you beat Matt Johns twice, please? I mean, can you get it done?
If Matt Johns would, if we didn't have to go to Leslie again, well, you know what? Although the first year they beat my diaper squad at Olivet that year, but make a run, huh? Well, it's kind of tough. I mean, this is we have a D4 school in Lansing Christian, a bunch of D3 schools, and the only two D2 schools are Olivet and Lakewood. Leslie and Stockbridge have spent time in D2, but they're both D3, I believe, right now. But making a run, I don't know. Or I mean, we'll see. I think the Leslie girls have had talent enough to do it occasionally, and the Stockbridge girls, I don't know that they necessarily have. None of the boys teams have made serious runs. We've had some district champions over time, but we do not had a regional. Stockbridge got to a regional final, I think, when Randy Swerland was coached them, believe it or not. But I don't know if anybody's even gone past that level. So it's not been really relevant on a state level. And we're hoping to do some more things. Our motto, by the way, is one more, not one more step. And if you'd like a t-shirt, I'm not sure I have one your size, but I'll see if I can send one over your way. Okay.
And you can share. If you send it, I'll wear it.
I'll send it to you. I want to see you wear it.
Will Bo Lincoln autograph it for me?
Bo will autograph. I got a couple of guys that might autograph it for you. But just weird to see a league just disband. I mean, it doesn't happen all the time. And it's funny. It's the second time that my first year at Olivet, we were in the KVA and we opted out of the KVA to the GLAC. And I saw this happen and they panicked, and the KVA, an established league for over 20 years, I think, maybe more, just disbanded after one more year and is no longer around. And the GLAC did not have that type of history, but just to see them gone after 9 years is going to be really weird. And with all the moving, I don't think the GLAC is going to be the last league to do it. In a couple of years, you may see a couple more leagues that either merge or are just no longer or just history. So it's kind of a weird deal. So
the one thing that I would note on the boys basketball side of things, I think is really interesting in this league is, I think there's some really good high-end talent. I think, you know, like we mentioned, Bo Lincoln, I think he's a stud. He obviously was a stud a year ago, but, you know, we really got, you got robbed of the second Lakewood Olivet matchup in terms of, you know, it being as high profile as it could have been because Jace Cusack was dealing with some injuries late in the year, but he is back as well. So with those two guys back, I'm hoping we get two good matchups there. And I know Lakewood probably is hoping they can be healthy and give you guys a run. And then I know there's some other good players in the league as well, but I thought that was noteworthy as well, just to note those two guys. Like you mentioned, like the level of play is really high and there's a lot of other good players as well, but I think those two are, should be recognized in like that all-state kind of category this year.
Correct. Well, speaking of best players in the area, this those two guys are definitely two of the best in the GLAC. But now we're talking about our area, and we've already touched on our areas all over the place. But who are the best players in our area? Who are the best players that we're going to talk about this year during some of our podcasts? And I mean, starting on the boys' side of things, I mean, I get jump in there. Who comes to mind is the top dog?
I think your number one guy is pretty darn easy when you look into it, and it's got to be Jaden Potts. I mean, he was named the MLive Player of the Year in the Ann Arbor area last year as a junior. He returns. I think he's a Division I player on a very good team. You know, his numbers weren't crazy a year ago because he's, you know, they play a very competitive schedule and they had a balanced offense a year ago. But, you know, obviously an extremely good athlete who's a really high-level player. I think overall, if you really had to break it down, I'd say he has the edge over everybody anywhere you want to extend our area. But if you guys disagree, let me know. But I'd say that's where you have to start the conversation for sure.
I had Jaden Potts as 1A, but I had Jake Stevens as 1B. And I think this year, I think he will put up numbers in that SEC White in their non-league schedule that maybe not only rival, but are superior to the numbers Potts puts up in the SEC Red. Jake's even bigger. I saw him today, actually at the Sunday League in Jackson. He's probably 2 inches even bigger than he was last year and probably another 15 pounds of muscle. You know, he already has a Division II offer. I think he'll have a lot more than that by the end of the year. And I'd say Jaden Potts and Jake Stevens were the top two on my list.
So Potts is right, you know, like you guys said, he's definitely got to be up there. I actually watched a video of him yesterday, and you know, we mentioned the Glock. I don't see that type of player in the Glock very often. I just want you to say, I mean, he blocks some shots with his hand, you know, up above the square. His dunks are effortless. He can go to the basket. He's strong as heck. Yeah, he does look like a D1 player. I think there's some – I don't know that he even has a D2 offer yet. Multiple D2s are interested, and I think there's some D1s that are even interested. But he's got some things that he's got to work out right now. I think it's a JUCO down in Texas that has offered him a good one too. But we'll see. But I'm pulling for this guy because he is exciting to watch. Watching them even in the just live stream, because that's really how I get to do it. He even looks – sometimes, you know, you don't get it. See athleticism on video sometimes, and his jumps out at you without question. I'm kind of curious, Josh. I mean, when people think about the best player at Chelsea, the name that comes to mind, love Jake Stevens' game, but the name that comes to mind is Joey Cavanna. So you coach both of them. I'm kind of interested in your comparison of why you would go with Stevens instead of Cavanna, because Cavanna, I would think, if Potts is not the best player in the era, Joey Cavanna might be the next guy in some
people's mind. I think he's right there as well. I mean, again, and that's why Chelsea should be so good this year. I would say Joey's right there with those guys. I just say that Joey's upside later might be higher, but the things that Jake does, I mean, the rebounds, the assists, the defense, the steals, the anticipation – I mean, Jake could lead them in steals, assists, rebounds, and points this year. I mean, that's the type of, you know, he's a stat stuffer, does it all. I don't know if we ran anything for him last year in his leading score, that type of thing. So that's why I had him there. But Joey's incredible as well. I mean, Joey's got a Division I offer and a handful of D2 offers. He's special in so many different ways too.
I think there's no doubt you guys are on the money with that. Caban and Stevens are right here on my list. The one guy, and again, we're just kind of the area is what we want the area to be. But I want to throw Aiden Davis into the mix because he's another guy who I think has a D1 offer. And we can qualify that. We talk about Onstead some. And he's a beast. So I think you got to throw him in there.
He might be better than everybody we just named. He really might be.
Yeah, and we played him a couple times this summer, and like there's just, you know, when nothing you can do with him inside. And he's got some, you know, he can shoot the ball a little bit, and he's just blocks everything inside. They're going to dominate again, I think. You know, I don't know if they'll go 20-0 or whatever, but I expect him to be close to that and a factor, you know, in the postseason again, and it's going to be because of him. So,
Their one chance probably for a loss is on the podcast. I mean, if anybody's going to beat Onstead this year, it's probably Olivet. I mean,
I'm not going there. If Davis wants to, like, you know, go to a family outing, you know, over between Christmas and New Year and not show up at Spring Arbor on the 29th, you know, we're probably not going to say anything. But actually, we're actually looking forward. That's why we took the game. We're looking forward to playing against not just a good team and a good program, but him, and just trying to stop him, because I think you guys use the word beast. That's how most people describe him, especially at the high school level. So have either of you seen, Makari Moore? He was a freshman. He got moved up at Huron last year and ended up, like, he was player of the week once or twice and multiple games and double figures. He's only going to be a sophomore. I think they just call him Mac, but he's another name that when you just talk to people, he's an absolute stud. So I don't know. And I don't know that we've got the other category later about surprise players that are going to come out of nowhere. I don't know if we can put him in that category, because I think people in the Ann Arbor area or even in the SEC Red, they know about this guy. But keep your eye on him too, as a guy who could put up huge numbers and maybe will help Coach Mo in that first year in terms of being a main cog on both sides of the ball. Josh?
I think we also have to mention one other guy, and he's not as dynamic as the guys we named, but this is the guy that got more votes for player of the year in the SEC last year in the SEC White than any other player. And that's Ryder Zajac. And he's coming back this year. And everything they do revolves around Ryder. He's got his ball in his hands at all times. He's going to have a great year as well. And he looks like he's in the best shape of his life. Not that he wasn't in good shape, but he is cut and trim and got taller. So, I mean, I could see him having a great year as well.
I think he's been eliminated from contention for player of the year in the area, though, because of the Roll Tribe jersey that was shown at the BCAM coaches clinic the other day in the video. So, I mean, you can't wear an illegal uniform, and we can't take you serious when you do that. But we're joking, of course. We wish Ryder well, but I hope he wears that uniform proudly. But I don't think we're going to see that anymore, by the way. So there's just a handful of boys, and there are probably a handful more that we're not even talking about. But what about on the girls' side? What girls' names come to mind as kind of our preseason or who we think is going to be, when all said and done, the best player in the area?
If you ask me, again, I think there's probably – I'm less confident on this side maybe, but I think you got to start the conversation probably with Layla Wells. I could be wrong. I mean, she might have some teammates that might disagree with me because they're stacked over there at Chelsea. But that's probably where, if you just asked me, that's where I would start the conversation. But yeah, what do you guys think? Am I right there? Or am I off the mark?
Well, let me just add to that before Josh speaks. There's at least one area coach that thinks her teammate Megan McCullough is the best player in the area and may not have the best upside compared to like Layla, maybe another one of her Chelsea teammates. But in terms of right now as being the best player in the area, he pointed to Megan McCullough. I thought that was interesting. But
well, I mean, yes, Megan's numbers are better than Layla's in high school. They are. And I watched them play a lot last year. Layla is the better player. It's the system that does that. So Layla does everything. She brings the ball down. She initiates the offense. She gets them into her offense. She does all those things that they need her to do. And in essence, the ball doesn't come back to her very often. And because they don't need it to, because they got girls like McCullough and Lay, who are, you know, McCullough's Division II player, and Avery Lay is probably a future Division I player. So, I mean, so in a lot of ways, they don't need her to carry the load in those ways. You know, Meg McCall is special, but Layla Wells is, I mean, we're going to watch her on TV one day. I'd argue that the second best player in the area, if it's not Megan McCall, it's Allie Zajac. I mean, Allie Zajac is almost like Aiden Davis, where if you don't game plan and put all your focus into her, there's no slowing her down. I mean, she's not quite that big. She can shoot the three. She can handle the ball. She can do everything. But she is the focus of everyone's attention and still puts up incredible numbers and has Division One. She might have a Division One offer, but I know she definitely has Division One interest.
So are you feeling bad about picking Chelsea to beat Tecumseh in football last week? Because I know John Zajac, the athletic director, gave us some crap about that, Josh, but you don't have to like just start stroking both of his kids and, you know, on the best player of the area podcast. Is that what we're doing here?
That is not what we're doing. It's called genetics. Mom and dad, both Division One basketball.
Yeah, I know they are. Just kidding, Allie and Ryder. We respect your abilities, but I could not resist that twist. So there's two, let's, before we jump, Arbor Prep. Now, let's not sleep on Arbor Prep. The Utomi twins, Stephanie and Stacy, are pretty dang good as well. They're Division One players and they're twins. They come at you two for the price of one, I guess. But at the end of the year, it's going to be interesting to see, one, how good Arbor Prep is, but how those two develop now that, you know, they're not just maybe just playing a role anymore. They might be a little more featured in that system, and their upside is everybody's always talked about it. So that's a pretty good group that we just talked about in terms of girls players. Moving on, here's one for you. So we talked about the best players, and I kind of referenced this when we were talking about Makari Moore from Huron. Who are going to be the biggest surprises in the area? What players, or I guess even teams or coaches, but I'm really kind of more focused on players. What players are going to come out of nowhere and kind of shock people or have their coming out party this year?
Yeah, I think this is a tough question because this is like trying to predict the most improved player or whatever in the NBA, where it's like, if you think he's going to be improved, then is he really the most improved, or does it have to be somebody, or the comeback player of the year? I don't know. But with the surprise, if you name it now, if we're correct now, then we're ruining the surprise. But this is tough for me on the girls' side. But on the boys' side, I have two names that come to mind, and these are not, they're both closer to where I coach, just because I know a little bit more about what's coming. I think two names that could really pop this year. One of them is Derek Sanders. At Brooklyn Columbia Central. I think he's going to be better than his brother. Carson Sanders, who just graduated from Hanover Horton. He was the best player at Columbia Central at the end of last year as a freshman. And he started the year injured. Fortunately for us, I guess we didn't have to play him in the first game of the year. Cause he'd have been tough even then, but I expect him to take a big jump this year, kind of be the featured guy almost already at only as a sophomore at Columbia. So I think he's one. The other one that comes to mind, this one is maybe not going to be on the stat sheet quite this much, but if you follow the area, this guy's name is popping up a lot. He's a freshman at Michigan Center. It's Travis Collins. They have so many young guys that are all going to be competing for these spots, and he may have to play, you know, some five quarter at the beginning there. I don't know. I mean, Coach Gaddy really likes to make guys prove it. The years I've been there, he hasn't even played a sophomore up on the varsity, let alone a freshman, but he is legit. He's built like a varsity kid. I saw him at the Michigan Center Napoleon football game, walking to the stands, and he's built like a varsity kid already. I think he could, really shock some people as a freshman, making a lot of noise in the Cascades. And I know those are too close to me, but I know more about the teams around here, I guess. What else you guys got?
I love the Derek Sanders pick. There's no question about that. He had an incredible spring and summer with DB45 playing up a year. He reclassed a few years back in middle school, but he's continued to play with that group. So technically he's playing up a year, but he played really well with that group this summer. Really came out of his shell attacking the basket. He is huge right now, athletic, strong. And that's not a super athletic league, the LCAA. So I could see him really doing some damage in there. And then, Derek, you get to deal with him as junior and senior year. Lucky you when he comes into your league. So, no, I that was a great pick. You know, as far as other players, I'm going to say one from Lou McChristie. I think Joe Lathers, who's our quarterback and the senior right now, is going to have an incredible senior year on the basketball court.
Got to overcome the assistant coach, but I think I remember seeing him play this summer, if it's the one I think he is, and he is a pretty talented kid. Here's a couple names, a couple quarterback twists for you. All right. We're not trying to get back to football. Rumor has it that Reeves Taylor, the Dexter quarterback, can also hoop a little bit. So don't be surprised if Dexter gets a little shot in the arm from Reeves Taylor after football season this year. And another quarterback, the Huron quarterback, Andrew Harding, little known fact about Andrew, he was a JV stud at Saline last year on the basketball court. And he transferred to Huron this year. And there's a couple guys that say he's a pretty dang good basketball player as well. So just, you know, athletically, those guys could have an impact on a couple of high profile teams. Keeping it a little more local within this podcast, you know, Derek's got two guys in Napoleon, that I admire as players. Trent Jester and Devontae Hayburn both are in this category. Now, they both have been significant varsity contributors, but they might not necessarily be known by a lot of people. Watch one or both of those guys could have a breakout year this year. They both, again, have been very good on two pretty good teams the last couple of years, but be careful there. Keep an eye on those two.
And Devontae could be the best guard in the Jackson area this year.
Yeah, I believe I just his body and just his ability, and he just plays so freely, and he just goes forever. If he can put up with Derek and just kind of deal with that, it's fine. I'm gonna a little plug here, not sticking on the Galak, but remember the name Bryce Wine. We all know Braden Wine. Braden Wine is gonna play college basketball. He's a senior for us. He's an outstanding player, a four-year varsity player. His younger brother, Bryce, is our off guard. He's about 6'2 and a half. He's gotten bigger and stronger. Watch him. Bo Lincoln gets a lot of press at Olivet. Braden Wine gets a lot of press, rightfully so. But this dude has put in some time, and I'd be really disappointed if he doesn't just have an outstanding junior year for us this year. So we shall see. And there again, there's so many players from the area that could be in this category. And as we go through the year, I'm sure we're going to start adding to it. Is there a team out there that you got like an ace in your pocket that, you know, right now you want to just say, keep an eye on them. They're going to be pretty good that we might not know about. Is there anybody out there?
I the one for me that like, I'm really curious about, I don't know that they have the ability to win their league or even like really win their district. I don't know. We'll see, but I'm really interested in Stockbridge. They have a lot of guys back. I know it's kind of a random one there, but I do feel like they run that sticky zone with a lot of their guys back, a lot of guys that were young and really contributed. I think they could surprise some teams and some people if they really can get on a roll. But I'm surprised Josh isn't mentioning the one he's always talking about is Addison. I was waiting for him to say that, but he was shaking his head like he didn't have any. But
I don't have one. I don't have one right now.
I've got one, and I do not want to stroke Josh. I try not to ever do that. I actually am intrigued by Lumen Christie this year. And I just think, you know, Josh is sitting in the weeds right now as this assistant coach. I think his impact is going to be huge with Lumen Christie. Tyler Aldridge done a good job there, but I think he's empowered Josh a little bit to kind of implement some system changes. And I watched those guys this summer and I was like, dang, that's a different team. They're playing with structure now. And they're, you know, they look like they felt good about themselves too. They had a nice vibe this summer. So they got a tough deal in the I-8, but the I-8 is not going to be the I-8 from last year. So I would not be surprised if Lumen Christie gets off to a good start and gets confident. They might even make a little bit of noise in their conference this year, but we shall see. We shall see. And of course, we don't want him to have too good of a run, because that means Josh, you know, all of a sudden he won't even be able to fit in the screen on the Zoom session anymore. But I am intrigued by that. So our last category, our last question or storyline I want to examine before we sign off: which team, girls or boys, has the best chance at making a deep postseason run, or will anybody make a deep postseason run this year?
I'm going to go with the staples, right? I mean, Grass Lake, Chelsea, Arbor Prep, and don't forget about the Fighting Tim Canes from Ann Arbor, Gibbershard. I like all of them to make a run. And I guess the other one that is intriguing to me, because they were D2 2 years ago and went to the Breslin Center, then went to D1 last year, but kind of forgot about them. And they're back in D2 is Parma Western. So you have like five girls teams, in my opinion, that could make big time runs. Unfortunately, they're going to run into each other around a regional final. But those are five girls teams that can make a really deep run. From the boys side, I mean, there's no question that the Chelsea Olivet regional final is going to happen. It's going to be in Chelsea and the boys side. And I cannot wait to see that game. Coach Seidel against my former players and Coach Cabana. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt it's going to happen in Chelsea. And with a chance to go play in a quarterfinal game against Mark White and Summit Academy. I like those chances. And the other boys team that I think is poised to make a run. And I said it the other night, if Napoleon football can get over the heat here, over the top with the center, I think that bodes well for Napoleon boys basketball. I think the winner of that Napoleon center district has a chance to be sitting in a quarterfinal game as well. And I think this is the year Derek's team gets past the center ghost, the nightmares, the whatever. So I think this is the year.
Josh is trying to put the pressure on us, clearly, but
no doubt. That's so obvious. My goodness.
I agree with him on the girls' side. I mean, I think it is, you know, there might be some surprises for us, but it seems pretty cut and dry in that sense. On the boys' side, I know when we had Coach Trumpur on, he mentioned that they're no longer in that Ann Arbor mega district there. So, you know, I have not, to be honest, I have not looked at how that now shapes up, but I wouldn't be surprised still if one of those teams can make a little bit of a run. It's just D1 is so tough. There's so many good teams at that level. I agree that Chelsea's got a good chance to make a run in D2. Like they're going to be more talented than, you know, the majority, if not all the teams that they're going to see early in the postseason. Not to say that they couldn't get popped. I do. The thing with the boys side in D3 is, yeah, the region that we fall into, that Josh at Lumen Christi falls into, like, I think you're going to have there's a good chance you're going to have a Jackson area regional champ. I do think that Potterville is a team that could win that region. That's not actually, and then I think like Bath won it last year. So they could as well, but you know, it's made up of like, you know, 90% Jackson area teams. So somebody's got to make a run out of there. And I do think that it's interesting. I mean, he mentioned us in center. I think both of us are capable, but you know, it's going to be tough. I think Lumen's capable. Stockbridge is capable. Jonesville, who's bumping down to D3 and had a really good regular season last year and then ran into, their tough D2 district is down in D3. So there should be a D3 team. We have a good chance of having a D3 team that makes wins a regional in the Jackson area.
Josh, I'm glad you've got us in a regional final already. I'll take that right now. We just started getting ready for that, so I didn't know it was that easy. So what a goofball! But
I thought we were supposed to make prediction.
Yeah, you're right. That's what this is, right? Just don't pick us. So one team I think is obvious is the Skyline Boys. I mean, there are going to be nights where they have like the three best players on the floor. I mean, we mentioned Potts. We didn't mention Sam Colling, who's a versatile 6'7" wing, and Ben Still, he's another 6'6" wing. And heck, Potts is 6'5" or 6'6" himself. They return four starters. They're probably going to start five seniors. If they can just get it together and stay focused and kind of play for each other, they are going to be as talented as anybody they play all year and maybe deep into the tournament. So and I agree with the other teams that you guys mentioned. I'm kind of curious to see how they gel. So, and of course the girls, I think we'll probably have deeper runs from our girls teams in the state tournament than we will from our boys teams. But, did we expect Belleville to be at the Breslin last year? Probably not, you know, and there they were. I mean, we knew they were good and they've been good every year and they're probably going to be good again. But those Cinderella runs are kind of cool as well. So anyway, that was a lot of basketball for October 10, but man, you could tell we're getting excited about it again, 5.5 or 6 weeks away for us. And, can't wait. And, we still got some football, to be played and some picks to be made, but, we're honing in a little bit. So good talking to you guys, and we'll see you next time.